Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Isn't this a bit weird that we're keeping you updated on the story and, of course, the breaking news coming out of Shushan, which is in Persia, as Lindy, our news editor, is following that story, but also, of course, following the Iranian story. It's just a very, very strange one. So doesn't seem yet to be confirmed evidence that Iran has built a nuclear bomb or weaponized warheads, but the assessment is that it is a very, very significant part of their program. David May is a research manager, senior research analyst. He joins us this morning. David May, Chag Sameach to you. Thank you for staying up to speak to us. I hope you are well.
Happy Purim. Thanks for having me, and good morning, good evening.
So isn't it bizarre that we are following the story of Iran while following the story of Persia?
I would say so. certainly, this is, if you're looking for historical precedents, you don't have to look any further than the Book of Esther to see a lot of parallels. But, you know, ultimately, if we're, you know, going into the Purim theme, I think one key line from there is when the Queen Esther is talking with her uncle Mordechai, and Mordechai says, who knows if you were placed in a position of power like this for a time like this. And so clearly all the elements have been lined up correctly and diligently over decades to get to this point where Israel and the United States are able to coordinate this attack and to take out much of the senior leadership of Iran.
Absolutely. And I have to tell you that's one of the lines that has resonated with me for many, many years. If I'm placed in a situation, the question is why, and maybe I am there for a reason. But all right, let's not be too introspective, and let's not make this about things that, well, it is but isn't. So let's start with I'm trying to understand the verified intelligence that there is. Undoubtedly, Iran has incredible military capabilities and was working to enhance them even further. Do we have a sense of how significant this military capability was?
So I would say that Iran, rather than having a traditional military like what we have with Western militaries, instead they basically put all of their eggs in a few baskets, and those are the ballistic missile basket, their network of proxies of terrorists who would do their bidding, and then finally with the attempt to develop a nuclear weapons program. And so while this allows them to project strength and to attack their enemies abroad, it does very little to actually defend the homeland. And so once those capabilities are neutered, Iran really doesn't have that much strength. And so we've seen, especially through the June attacks and through the current attacks, Israel and the United States' ability to maintain air superiority and dominance over the skies of Iran, and Iran increasingly unable to send whatever weapons, whatever missiles it has, because for however many weapons and missiles that it has that it can launch, the real question is with the rocket launchers, how many of those are functional, and if Israel is able to hunt those down faster than Iran can replace them, then they can have as many missiles as they want. They won't be able to fire them against Israel. But it should be noted that many of those missiles are very advanced and they can cause damage. And for however strong Israel's missile defense program is, it's not 100% flawless. So some missiles will come through.
I saw a comment last night or early this morning that Rubio made, and I just want, here we go. He said, because Iran in about a year or a year and a half would have crossed the line of immunity, meaning they would have had so many short-range missiles, so many drones, that nobody would have been able to do anything about it because they would effectively hold the whole world hostage. Would you agree with that statement?
clearly the Secretary of State's intelligence to lead to that assessment. I think it's very true. What he's saying is that Iran's goal through all of this was to be able to stockpile and accrue enough capability so that it would make its nuclear program and make its foreign policy, its foreign adventurism immune to foreign interference. And so at some point they were going to be able to get enough weapons that they could conduct their foreign policy, their aggressive foreign policy in a way that couldn't be checked. And so the time was now. And I think also just the Trump administration, it did its part in trying to engage on the diplomatic track, and they realized pretty early on that Iran wasn't serious about negotiating. The negotiations were just a stall tactic, and so they would do their utmost to convince the Americans that they were actually serious, but they never were. And the whole point of the negotiations were just to stave off a U.S. attack, but without actually any commitments to U.S. demands.
What do we understand? Is there an understanding of what the damage was during the 12-day war?
I believe they have a fairly accurate battle damage assessment. A lot of the key military, the key nuclear installations were either destroyed or severely degraded. But some of the claims that they were obliterated, those are a little bit overblown. But clearly, they were set back. The assessments I saw were about 2 years. But being set back 2 years means that it's not completely destroyed. And so if Israel allowed and the United States allowed Iran to continue unabated, they would eventually be able to have that either that nuclear veto or the ballistic missile veto to allow itself to continue its aggressive foreign policy unchecked.
So in terms of the enrichment, the pre-strike levels, had they managed to get back to a point of production again?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure exactly where they were, but it was clear from the American statements that they were back to developing their ballistic missiles, and they were trying to get back to an enrichment capacity. And I think the other more concerning part is not just where they were in terms of their stockpiles, but also they were trying to build facilities underneath mountains that would be potentially impenetrable. And so they would get to a point where they're sort of boots on the ground. There would be no U.S. ability to intervene to prevent them from having that pathway to a nuclear bomb.
What do you make of the strategy that Iran seems to have, well, has, of bombing its neighbors, Qatar, who with whom it has had at least a reasonable relationship, Bahrain, the UAE, Saudi Arabia. Obviously, some of them are much closer to the United States than Iran would want them to be, but yet it still doesn't, if you'll excuse the expression, strike me as a smart strategy to completely alienate yourself in your own neighborhood.
So, from the Iranian perspective, there's two elements of that might explain why they're taking out, why they're carrying out that strategy. So, one is that there's many U.S. Installations in those countries, and so they're targeting U.S. installations in those countries, and they may be less protected, less defended than installations in Israel or elsewhere. And so that might explain part of it. The other part is that they are trying to make it so that countries on the American side incur some type of risk, some type of punishment for siding with the Americans. So that's from the Iranian perspective. But in reality, even as sound as that might appear to the Iranians, what's happening is that it's making those Arab countries, those Gulf countries, draw closer to the United States and to Israel. It's reviving the Abraham Accords idea of shared interest between Israel and the Arab countries. And it's also making those countries, their leadership, convinced and making the argument that there's no standing sitting on the sideline with Iran. If you try to kind of negotiate, navigate between the United States and Iran, or between Israel and Iran, you'll get caught in the middle. And so that's what many of these countries did, and now they're paying the price for trying to have their cake and eat it too.
I saw quite a disturbing tweet last night from Alon Levy, where he commented on the fact that many of these countries, the UAE included, doesn't have or will not have sufficient capability over a period to sustain an attack from Iran. In other words, they could disarm their weapons and the missiles for now, but that has a very finite ending. What are your thoughts on that?
That's definitely a concern, especially when we're talking about this is a numbers game. The weapons that Iran produces, they tend to be cheaper than the defensive systems that are in place to intercept those. And so Iran can try to bleed out the Western countries and their allies, and make it a situation where the Western allies and their countries are expending more money in order to defend themselves. But if Israel is able and the United States are able to take out the missile launchers, and before they can actually fire all the missiles that they have, then that will change the equation. But that doesn't affect the drones. And so Iran has a pretty robust and pretty prolific drone program, especially as we've seen from them siding and aiding the Russians in Ukraine. And so a lot of those strikes that are hitting different countries in the Gulf are actually from drones. And so that's much harder to stop. But it really comes down to how much weapons the United States has in its stockpiles and how easily it can transfer those to its allies.
David May, thank you as always. Now, hopefully, you can go and relax and enjoy Purim, and let's hope that it continues to be a time of miracles. David May is a research manager, senior research analyst. He chats to us from Washington.